Imagine being the person everyone turns to for emotional support, then suddenly finding yourself sobbing uncontrollably on a therapist's couch. This is precisely what happened to Lori Gottlieb when her seemingly perfect relationship imploded without warning. Her boyfriend, the man she believed was the one, suddenly announced he couldn't commit to raising her young son. Despite her professional training as a therapist, Lori found herself utterly unable to apply her therapeutic wisdom to her own crisis. She couldn't sleep, eat, or focus on her patients. Her friends offered well-meaning but unhelpful advice. Just move on. There are plenty of fish in the sea. But this wasn't just heartbreak. It was an existential crisis about her future, identity, and deepest fears. Finding a therapist when you are one presents unique challenges. Lori approached the task with professional knowledge but personal reluctance, worried about running into colleagues or patients and dreading the vulnerability required. Her search led her to Wendell, whose casual demeanor and direct questions challenged her expectations. During their first session, Lori tried controlling the narrative, presenting herself as a composed professional temporarily derailed by a breakup. But Wendell saw through her defenses, asking simply, "What is it you want me to say?" This question marked the beginning of her real therapeutic journey. She realized she didn't just want comfort, she wanted understanding. She employed all the classic avoidance techniques she recognized in her own patients, intellectualizing, deflecting with humor, focusing on surface issues rather than deeper patterns. While navigating her own therapy, Lori continued treating four notable patients: Julie, a young woman facing terminal cancer; John, a narcissistic television producer with anger issues; Charlotte, a 30-something alcoholic avoiding deeper problems; and Rita, an elderly woman contemplating suicide after decades of isolation. Julie struggles with finding meaning when facing death. John's arrogant exterior masks profound grief over his son's death, admitting, "I don't know how to be happy anymore." Charlotte uses humor to deflect from her addiction and self-destructive patterns. Rita, nearly 70, embodies the fear that it's too late for change. Her lifetime of isolation stems from early trauma, but when she unexpectedly connects with a man named Myron, she must choose between risking vulnerability or retreating to familiar loneliness. What happens in the space between therapist and patient? Effective therapy isn't about giving advice or analyzing dreams, but creating a safe space where people can tell and rewrite their stories. "The presenting problem is rarely the real problem," Lori explains. Julie discusses cancer, but struggles with authenticity. John's anger masks grief. Charlotte's chaotic love life distracts from her alcohol dependency. Therapy works through the relationship itself. Patients project expectations onto therapists, who use their own emotional responses as diagnostic tools, asking, "What is this person making me feel, and what might that tell me about their internal world?" A powerful moment occurs when Wendell uses the Hebrew word neshama, soul, to describe what he sees in Lori, one human recognizing another's humanity beyond professional roles. We discover ourselves through relationships. Therapy works not through technique, but through authentic human connection. People often mistake therapy for confession, Gottlieb writes, but confession implies judgment, while therapy offers understanding. Why do we repeatedly recreate childhood dynamics in adult relationships? Charlotte consistently chooses emotionally unavailable men, then feels rejected when they don't commit, a pattern stemming from her distant father relationship. By selecting men who can't fully engage, she recreates a familiar dynamic while hoping for a different outcome. "We tend to repeat what we don't repair," Lori observes. Our unresolved wounds become blueprints for adult relationships until we break the cycle. John's rage at idiots mirrors his anger at himself for his son's death. Rita's isolation reflects her early lesson that relationships lead to abandonment. Lori realizes her attraction to boyfriend partly stems from his resemblance to her emotionally reserved father. The book examines projection, attributing to others qualities that actually belong to ourselves. John projects self-loathing onto others, while Charlotte projects abandonment fears onto potential partners. Once we recognize these patterns, we can choose differently. As Lori notes, we can't have change without loss, which is why so many people say they want change, but nonetheless stay exactly the same. At its core, this book is about grief, not just from death or breakups, but the subtle grief accompanying all life transitions. Julie grieves her foreshortened future, John, his son, Charlotte, her idealized self-image, Rita, decades of isolation, and Lori, her lost relationship. There are no neat stages to progress through or closure. Instead, grief becomes part of us, changing shape over time without completely disappearing. When John asks how long his grief will last, Lori responds, "The grief doesn't go away, it just changes form." She introduces him to both-and thinking. He can both mourn his son and love his daughter, both honor Gabe's memory and find moments of joy. Julie's Approaching Death offers the book's most profound exploration of grief. As her cancer progresses, she and Lori discuss what matters at life's end. Julie creates What Not to Say to a Dying Person, critiquing platitudes like "everything happens for a reason." What she wants is authenticity, real connection in the face of mortality. Her journey leads to unexpected joy at Trader Joe's, where simple human interactions bring more meaning than her previous academic pursuits. Wendell reminds Lori, "We tend to think that the future happens later, but we're creating it in our minds every day," helping her see how fear of future pain blocks present joy. Her patients discover that vulnerability, though frightening, opens the path to meaning. John and Margot heals through renewed vulnerability. Rita's approach to Myron becomes her first authentic connection in decades. Charlotte's sobriety creates possibilities for genuine intimacy. And Lori finds her breakup, while painful, creates space for new forms of connection and self-discovery. The goal isn't absolution, but integration, bringing disowned parts of ourselves into consciousness through another's compassionate attention. This healing extends beyond therapy into all relationships where being truly seen and accepted matters. As the book concludes, Lori's therapy with Wendell ends not because she's fixed, but because she's developed tools to continue independently. Her patients likewise reach turning points. Julie faces death peacefully, John begins integrating grief, Charlotte embraces sobriety, Rita risks connection with Myron. These aren't endings, but new beginnings. The real work happens after therapy ends, as people apply insights to daily life. Therapists often say that the most important work happens between sessions, Lori notes. This challenges our quick-fix culture. Meaningful change isn't reaching a destination, but embracing a process, developing more effective ways to engage with life's ongoing challenges. In the final pages, Lori imagines her patients continuing their journeys. We're all works in progress, evolving through relationships and experiences. Therapy, like life itself, isn't about reaching perfection, but embracing the messy, beautiful process of becoming more fully human.